Good morning, Mr. Addis.
Yes, morning. And to all of you to whom I've done that over the years, I apologize to you now. Because I hear you laugh, it seems as though you've been so afflicted.
Oh, boy. I like that. How are you doing, man?
I'm okay.
Good. On to your guest. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Yeah. Now, the thing about it, I just joined you based on the comments you were making on the bank.
Yeah.
And the thing about it is that they're good comments. My position is quite clear. I've been thinking about this for a long time. I've been calling about it. As we go back, the first thing that should happen is that the present government should let Central Bank or give Central Bank some sort of okay to return to controlling of the commercial banks, the controlling of commercial banks. And I'll tell you why. Over the years, back in the 80s, on your savings account, I mean, banks are always there to make money, and I think investment is weighed in that the sense that they do lots of different things. At any financial year, they give you a report making millions of dollars. In the 80s, they were giving you something like 10 to 12%. 90s, about 8 to 8.5. That went on to about up to 204. This whole thing with the situation is where, and you highlighted it, the central bank, then because of their, the government's position at the time, and the one to ban of bonds and what's not, created havoc, whereby the commercial banks that were given permission to do as they like. And that's when the interest rates to depositors varied. It also, the other combination is when the mergers came about. And then we were then controlled by the mother bank in the sense that you can't go to a bank now to make an application for a loan and get the okay done here in Barbados. It has to go to Canada or Trinidad or somewhere else to be okayed. And this is where a lot of things have happened where deposits are concerned. Today, when you are getting zero, study it carefully, 0.01%. It's just a waste of time having your money in a commercial bank today. But you see, we are stuck between a rock and a hard place because if you're in business, whatever you do, you're making money. You have to look somewhere to deposit or do it. Corey says he's going to buy a big safe and keep it home. I wouldn't advise anybody safe in a daily today where crime is so rampant. The bottom line for me is to get the commercial banks back in a position where they can we can negotiate and get a better interest rate on your money. Because an investment is for lots of people, you know. You have anything to say on that?
Crystal, you want to speak?
Well, I've seen in other Caribbean jurisdictions where banks have found creative products to offer to people as an incentive for them to keep their money in the system. For example, I believe it is in Jamaica where there is a savings account that you can create pursuant to having your mortgage deposit. So I really believe that the banks in Barbados have not really demonstrated the innovative thinking that they ought to have. That being said, I've observed alternative financing entities like Signia provide some kind of creativity in the products that they offer. So all in all, there needs to be some pressure put on the banking system. It would be good if someone from the Bankers Association could share some thoughts in terms of where they see themselves going. But Barbadians really need to take a stand as it relates to the current situation. It is untenable. It is certainly unfair. And I, for one, have been withdrawing my relationship with the banks. And I'm not surprised to hear people in the highest quarters of this nation suggesting that people do the same. The banks definitely need to do better by the people. There's no reciprocity in the relationship right now.
Fair enough. But I want to correct you on something. And to say that the banks at this point in time, you said they should look at creating incentives. The bank doesn't have to create any incentives. The bank at this point in time is in control. If they today say they're going to give no interest, that's it. There's no discussion. And then what happens? people still leave their money in the bank. So they know that they have the power. Until you put pressure on them, they know they have the power right now to do as they like. And this is that it really wants to look it into, you know. Now, I want to go on quickly. We are, as a people, we talk about the banks now. But as a people, I find that we get unfair in many, many areas. And it is in the lines of billing. Light and power, they do as they like. Barbados Water Authority, they do as they like. And there is no one. Should it be a consumer board or something that we should have to control these things? Because I for a long time have problems with Barbados Water Authority and how they do their billing to the final consumer. I'm going to say so. You pay to have water installed at your premises, whereby it is a meter, and you go, you pay your money. It's $400, I think it is, to have that installed. Thereafter, they are telling you with a minimum water bill. So if you leave the island for 6 months, and you decide not to turn the water off, you've got to pay a minimum water bill. On a standard procedure, you've got to pay a minimum water bill. Where did they put in the meter? The meter is three from one to any amount of cubic meters of water you use. And then it should be a rate, as far as I'm concerned. But when you say a minimum bill, and then thereafter, then you're charged on a ratio. It's madness as far as I'm concerned. Because when you do the calculation, the math on the amount of people that have water, you know, it's money they're making. All these things weren't looking into, weren't breaking down and explaining to the people properly are looking into. Businesses are unfair right across the board. And, you just can't do nothing about it.
And what are the people who steal people's water? They don't unfair the Barbados Water Authority too.
The people who steal
It's not a one-sided affair, you know.
If you're going somewhere now, David, you know what I mean? You're going to call for exposure now. You can't steal the body water unless you've got an inside connection.
Well, that may be a different story. It may be aided and abetted if that's what you're suggesting. But at the end of the day, it works both ways. I'm not getting involved in trying to establish which one is in the majority or the minority. But there's also the question of paying for the infrastructure. And we all recognize that in a water-scarce country, whether you like it or not, we are in a water-scarce country, a lot of work still needs to be done. So I think we have to balance your concerns for paying a minimum fee against the other concerns that exist out there. We're coming right back. Back in 2015, I had read some material coming out of the Globe and Mail in Canada about the state of commercial banks operating here in the Caribbean. That information suggested that the leading commercial banks in the region had taken a beating from the tourism sector, and that we were going to see significant changes. We are already seeing those changes take place. So it is always interesting to go and see what the trends are there. Because to a large extent, we sometimes behave as though it all begins and ends with us. In this commercial banking sphere here in Barbados and the Caribbean, a lot depends upon what is happening in Canada, first of all. So let's take RBC. This article was published on June the 13th and updated on the 14th. It said, amid a digital revolution upending norms in nearly every industry, Royal Bank of Canada is investing heavily in a new division that will fundamentally alter the way it targets and attracts personal and commercial banking customers. At an investor conference on Wednesday, Canada's largest lender unveiled RBC Ventures, an arm designed to lure clients using unconventional means, initiatives, and apps, the bank hopes will make Canadians much more likely to switch financial institutions, something they are currently reluctant to do. For decades, RBC's retail and personal bank pursued clients using traditional sales methods, such as mailing millions of credit card offers directly to Canadian homes. Bank branches also served as large nets that helped gather millions of customers. Once clients were inside, they could be offered multiple products. Until recently, these tactics were rather lucrative, and the personal and commercial bank dominated RBC's bottom line, delivering 50% of total profit. In the past few years, however, RBC executives realized the nature of relationships between customers and companies was changing, and rapidly. Everything from voice-activated home devices, such as Amazon Echo, to ride-hailing apps, such as Lyft, established new norms for client interactions. To augment its outreach, RBC decided to build businesses in this RBC Ventures unit that reach clients well before they consider whether they need a banking product. So you need to be aware of this kind of thinking, because you know, it is going to filter down here sooner than you think. Now, the other issue to this is, and what will they charge us? This is Down to Brass Tacks. Yes, you're on the air too.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Mr. Ellis, let me start where you just ended. What part did, it's just a question, what part did Canada play in slavery, having so much to say and do in the Caribbean? Right, you can answer that some other time. The caller before the last, I thought I had the answer to the bank, the problem with the bank. So let me read it as I wrote it. The answer to the question with banks is a no bulky, heavy currency. You get that? You could question that after I go off. Now, every problem has its age. The age for this and the age for that. Now, this is the age for multiplicity, which means before you can deal with a problem, another one arises. So therefore, you also have a bulky problem. I think I'll stop there for now.
All right, ma'am. Thank you very much. And especially thank you for letting me off the hook by allowing me to answer these questions another day. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello. This person says, I'm sitting here this morning listening to Brass Tacks and smiling. Why do Bajans always want somebody else to fight their battles? This morning they're talking about what the banks do in Barbados. But will Bajans fight? Oh no, they will complain, etc. They complain about the prices all over the place, especially the supermarket. But will they fight? No, not a Bajan. Anyone can come into this country and get rich on the backs of Bajans, especially black ones, says the writer. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, good morning.
I like to see a lot of the banking also. Then you have the charity, and you bank the money at the bank. Every month they take out all the charity. Do you know a lot of people when I lost, so some people they cannot even say and to vote their own selves. Years ago, people used to say something in case the dog they had to bury them. The banks is taking all the money so fast, and no interest. That when you die, you don't even have a cent. And charity is the same thing. I think the bank is watering Bajans and the last body up that you weave from so that Bajans is fighting the fight. I don't think so. When your money that you work so hard for, and you have to go through all sorts of things.
This is your personal pain? This is something that you clearly are going through all right now?
This is a pain where the organizations I do not, so I'm not allowed that charities. And you have to or something also the charities.
That that her point is that even the charities and the organizations that are there to assist the disabled and the, people like that are facing this problem. That's the point.
Yes, and it is bad because it like you wasn't on the floor where the charities help organization help people at the all sorts of things. And how can you help your own people? And I don't think it's that. If you have as a poor person managed to save at least $2,000, how can you take it off that? You know, if it is millions of dollars, and it seems to me that poor people all this good wealth.
Okay, you know? You realize what's happened here. There's a link between the bigger picture and what is happening to the person at the bottom end.
True.
Because if you have the country's finances in such a state where the government is scrambling to see what assistance they can get and how much money it can raise in bonds and that sort of thing, then it relaxes the restrictions that might have existed on the commercial banks. And the commercial banks, and there's a quid pro quo. You give me this, you take that. We seem to be in all of this, and we need to be able to make the connection between one and the other. And therefore, much hinges on how the government is going to be able to fix the big picture problem that Barbados is currently experiencing. What are your thoughts, Crystal?
My understanding is that when we chose the status of selective default, that it also had an impact on the banks as well. So it will be interesting to see how that whole scenario unfolds and the reaction that the banks will make.
Yes. Down to brass tacks.
Hello.
Welcome to the program. Good morning.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm well, and you?
Not too bad. You're back, sir. Always good to have the captain on board.
Thank you very much, Captain. It's great to have you.
Only a deckhand. I'm only a deckhand. Mr. Ellis, I want to, I want to comment on two things that you mentioned this morning, very briefly. For further discussion at some other point in time. That seems to be new order. First of all, I want to comment on this situation with the banks, sir. About 5 years ago, before it was suggested by some people, including myself, that the Barbados Central Bank was not really in control of the situation here. They're not really in control. But where we were hampered is that we do not have a national bank. It was suggested then that if we had a national bank, we could join the OECS central bank system and save ourselves that capital cost. But of course, that was frowned on. We can't do it now because we do not have a national bank. So we have nobody to represent us on the central bank board. We have a financial services commission here. And of course, these people just seem to sit there and have meetings and they don't do anything to help the people of Barbados, unfortunately. The former governor of the central bank, who is very, very vocal now about what government should and should not do, he was in a position to set a benchmark interest rate between, let's say, 1.5% and 2.5% to give the banks the option of moving up and down and still competing among themselves. And 1.5 and 2.5%, you don't have to touch it again for the next 10 years. Instead of that, he relinquished that responsibility and left it up to commercial banks. It's unheard of for commercial banks to be setting their own rates, because all they're going to do is to set the lowest rate possible, and they are exploiting the deposits of Barbados, taking our money, investing that 6% for mortgages, 5 and 6%. They invested that 12 and 15% for domestic loans, and when it comes and car loans, and when it comes to credit cards, it's often 20%. So they are making a killing, and there's nothing we can do. The government, present government, has got to bite the bullet and reinstate a national bank. All the credit unions have got to set up a national bank. They don't have to own all the capital. They could join me, maybe a Chinese bank. The Trinidadians are waiting for Chinese banks to come in. We could, the credit union could set up a bank of their own with equity from, from the Chinese bank and from the public. They don't have to be on the government. That is one point. The other point is this, sir. This thing about housing has been completely mishandled. And I agree with you, Mr. Ellis. Instead of going after unit housing for middle-class people, you make loans available to middle-class people and they do their own transactions. But for the housing poor, you set up a series of high-rise developments, and that will take care to a large extent of those people who do not have the capital to get $300,000 to build a house, because they can get accommodation, one-bedroom, two-bedroom apartments, at half the cost that they would get otherwise. It would bring down the cost of real estate in Barbados in the first place. It would house more people. To give you an example, you can take 20,000 square feet of land and divide it into five lots or four lots. Or you can take the same 20,000 square feet of land and build a six-story building on it with eight apartments each floor. That's 48 housing solutions as opposed to five. And that is where we have gone wrong. They've done it in America, they've done it in Canada. When he went to Canada, there was a rush in the apartment complex building, and that's the only way they could accommodate all the immigrants that were going there, and we should have taken that. But somehow, there's some people in government who thought that they could take the housing situation and turn it into a commercial venture and making profits. That is out of order, and that is where the whole housing thing went wrong. The final point, sir, the government came to office and they have put a budget out there. And I have heard the private sector business, the private sector, agriculture, say that, okay, it's a clever budget, so it is a budget that has potential. But I am not hearing any commitment from the major economic entity in Barbados. I have not heard from the agricultural sector what they intend to do to help the government to grow the economy. What crops are you going to bring back into vogue, into operation? So that we can save money on food, we can export if we do cotton, and so on and so forth, export get points. Nothing, no commitment from the private sector agriculture.
But I don't read the budget the way that you do. The last budget that we had, the first one given by this new administration, in the way that you are reading it. It as a stopgap measure pending the agreement with the International Monetary Fund. I believe that the more important issue for us to resolve is what differences may exist between ourselves and the fund and what agreement we can come up with in a matter of weeks, if not a few months. So I don't see this. I really saw this as a budget to signal not only to the fund, but to others, that Barbados is indeed serious about trying to tackle the major problems that have been flagged time and time again. And this is the new policy approach that is being adopted while we sit down to talk.
Mr. Ellis, I agree with you that the relationship between the government and the IMF is different to the relationship between the private sector, agriculture, the private sector banks, the credit unions, the labor unions. That's what I'm talking about. And on the other side, these are the operators in our country who have an opportunity to make a contribution. The government cannot do everything on its own. I am not hearing any commitment from private sector agriculture. I'm not hearing anything from the banks. I'm not hearing anything from the credit unions. I'm not hearing anything from the labor unions. What are these major contributors to the economy? What are they going to do to help the government to get the economy moving?
I'll get a comment from Crystal Austin, and then we'll take a commercial break after that and come back to you on this issue. Yes, Crystal.
Yes, David. These are early days yet. It was indeed a mini budget, so it wouldn't have had everything. And I believe that, as David said, the idea was to tackle those massive challenges that we have, like our debt to GDP ratio, the fact that we were running out of reserves, etc. But going forward, I will be very much watching, like you, caller, the extent to which we move with alacrity to deal with the agriculture issue. I am one who is very vexed when I drive the highway and see all these river tamarind trees and the fact that there's nothing that can be done with them from the perspective of export or nutrition or anything of that nature. So I too will be looking to see what plans we have. We also have a significantly high food import bill of about $800 million, I believe it is. And that in itself is eating away at our precious reserves. So all of those are issues, I believe, that we have all discussed, those of us who've been monitoring the sector, and it is imperative for the government now to provide us with the plans that they have.
I think that agriculture has a special problem, and it is that there is so much negativity associated with the agricultural sector in Barbados that the good things that we do in agriculture are hidden, forgotten. And I mean, I give you one example of something that I see staring us in the face as a positive. I remember when a plantation in St. Peter had been bought over or taken over through some court action. And there was an Australian man who was running this plantation over the years and had been doing a phenomenal job producing specialty items like lettuce and herbs and stuff like that. And the minute that he said I was finished and I was going to leave the island, there was these cries of concern coming from people in the hotels and people who are into catering and that sort of thing. But you realize that void has been filled. Just go in your supermarket and look and see all these little packages in almost every supermarket of note in Barbados today. There are people who are providing for that market. Nobody celebrates that. All we ever hear is how bad agriculture is in this country. The other area that stands out for me is the number of people who are treating sugar like how you treat a centipede. Killy, 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 killy. You know, absolutely no discussion whatsoever about what is possible. All we hear is sugar is dead, we should kill it, and do what? They have no alternative, but they spend no time focusing on the positive. I really do believe that there is a need to look at the challenges. I don't disagree with that. But I feel that we need to take a little bit of time to do an audit of what it is that we have got that we can say we still have something going for us in these particular niches of agriculture. And that also takes into consideration a number of people who have invested in hydroponics and that sort of thing and are doing things, but kind of under the radar because they don't really, for one reason or the other, they don't want to come out there.
I wouldn't say that they don't want to come out there. And I too believe we should identify and celebrate those best practices. But there are too many pockets that have the potential to go national, like the same aquaponics. I believe that the last administration had the opportunity to provide funding to ensure that these types of programs were made predominantly available across the nation or invested in across the nation, as opposed to one or two persons struggling, trying to get them off the ground or relying on unique financing opportunities like the Bank on Me. I believe the very first winner of the Bank on Me competition would have been someone who was in the field of aquaponics. So at the national level, yes, there are things that can be celebrated, but there's not enough being done for the sector for us to really be celebrating.
I'm not going to dispute that more cannot be done. I'm not going to dispute that. But I think that part of the remit of those who have a responsibility for agriculture in this country is that they have to do a little less complaining and spending a little bit more time highlighting what is positive and giving others in Barbados something to aspire to show them that they too can achieve if they apply their minds and ask for assistance in the right quarters, notwithstanding the fact that I think agriculture has had more assistance than most other sectors in the country. We're coming right back.